So good afternoon. My name is George Ambrosiadis. I'm a PhD candidate at the University of Toronto. The work I'll be presenting was conducted in collaboration with Dr. Mehta Bhatkamkar of Semantics Research Labs. Together, we analyzed customer data from SemanticNet Backup. That's Semantics Enterprise Backup and Recovery product. The goal of our paper was to analyze how NetBackup is deployed in the field. But before I get into the details of our results, let me start with a story. So about a week ago, I was expected to start an internship here in the US. In order to do that, I had to obtain a visa. So I booked an appointment at the US consulate. A few days later, however, I received this email from the consulate of Toronto telling me that there were some technical problems and due to hardware failure, my appointment could not be honored. It took about 2 weeks for the system to go back online and for me to find out what that problem was. It turns out that the hardware failure caused one of their databases to go down that stored the biometric characteristics for visa applicants, and they had to restore a backup. So a Wall Street Journal article did the math on the backlog from this failure. They mentioned that on a normal day, U.S. Post handled about 50,000 applications. The outage itself took about 2 weeks to be restored. And this resulted in multimillion dollar losses from companies that depend on immigrant workers, like myself. However, it turns out that when the system came back online, it only did so partially. So if you looked at the State Department website on the 25th of June, they still reported the recovery process was ongoing. This is, by the way, only one instance that demonstrates how slow and error-prone the backup and recovery process is. But it is a prime example of why we think that our study is relevant, because backup systems today are facing major challenges. And this is mainly due to two reasons. The first one is that they've just become too complex. If you look at the top three commercial products that are available today, they come with basic administration guides that exceed well over 1,000 pages. There was a survey that was conducted recently across 1,200 businesses, and they found out that they experienced problems recovering from backups one in every six times that they attempt to do so. The other reason that these systems are facing problems today is that there's simply too much data to back up. There were two other surveys of similar size conducted recently that found that 94% of businesses back up more than just their mission critical data. And as a matter of fact, 4 out of 10 back up everything they have on their drives. So it doesn't come as a surprise that they found that only 28% of these businesses complete all of their backups on time, and the rest of them may actually end up falling off their scheduling windows and affecting the performance of the system during working hours. The problem with this complexity and the missed goals of these systems is also that customers are frustrated, and 55% of these businesses said that they plan to change their backup tools within the next 24 months. So this is basically the motivation behind our study. We wanted to use customer data from SemanticNet Backup to understand how people are using these systems and help researchers and the community also understand that and improve and hopefully inspire future researchers to improve these systems. So before I delve into our findings, let me start by giving you a little bit of background on data protection systems. By the way, backup systems and data protection systems, I use those as interchangeable terms during the presentation. Now, in their simplest form, data protection systems come with multi-tier domains. They can come with two layers. The first one is the clients that obviously send the data to the system to be backed up. And the other layer is the master server that receives the data, also contacts the agents on the client side to tell them to start a backup so they're in charge of job scheduling. Now, obviously, if you're in an enterprise environment with hundreds of clients or more, this doesn't scale. So that's when another layer is introduced, that of storage servers. They take over backup storage from the master server. And so then the master server's role is reduced to telling clients which storage server to contact and send their data. Another term I'll be using a lot during the presentation is that of backup policies. In the context of this talk, whenever I talk about a backup policy, what I mean is basically the schedule that is used to tell the client how to back up its data. So for example, a policy would be to tell a client to back up its data every week and perform a full backup, and then complement that with daily incremental backups. In reality, things are a little bit more complex. There are a lot of parameters to fine-tune. Now, another thing about policies is that they come in different flavors. There are different policy types that cater to different applications. If you want to back up an Oracle database, get a consistent snapshot of it, then you need to use a policy that uses the protocol that Oracle likes in order to do that. Similarly, there's a policy for VMware to back up virtual machines, and if you want to back up Microsoft Exchange servers, there's a Microsoft Exchange policy. So the way that we collected data from these systems for our paper was to receive telemetry from customers that deploy the Net Backup product. So we did this, customers opted in, and they basically send weekly reports with what their system was doing. These weekly telemetry reports contain information about the runtime of the system, like how many jobs were running and what types of jobs, and also configuration statistics, so how many clients were attached to the system and what policies were they subscribed to. And the cool thing about telemetry like this is that you can string together these weekly reports and generate time series for a domain. And since we monitor systems from their inception, we can study these time series to see how these systems evolve over time. So for the data set we analyzed contains a million of those reports. It was collected from 40,000 domains and over the span of the last 3 years. We'd also like to think that this is a fairly diverse data set. It's made up, a third of it is domains that contain three tiers, so master servers, storage servers, and clients. The rest of them are just two tiers, so they omit the storage server layer. And about less than a third of these domains use dedicated backup appliances like the one I show there in the picture. So those are basically servers that are dedicated to doing backup work. Now, so for the outline of my talk, I'll now talk about the findings that you've probably been waiting for. So we've broken down our findings into three different categories, ranging from results that are specific to domain configuration to those that are specific to jobs. And finally, I will conclude the talk by pointing out avenues for future research that were supported by our findings. So the first category of results is that of domain configuration. Recall that by domain, I mean the entire backup system. And by configuration, what I mean is, for example, how many clients are attached to the system. That's something that can change over time. And I'm going to start with that. So the plot that I show here was taken from one domain. What I show here is the number of clients for that domain as it changes over time. So the y-axis is the number of clients. The x-axis is the week of operation for the domain. So since we monitor systems from their inception, this number starts close to zero until the administrator has added all of the clients in the system, and that's where the configuration period ends. We've also, past that configuration period, we've studied how often there are changes in the number of clients and what is the magnitude of these changes. Now, I'm going to highlight some findings that we have in the paper. One thing we found is that the client populations rarely shrink. This initial configuration period I described before lasts on 3 weeks on average. But as soon as that is over, 93% of changes in the number of clients are attributed just to growth, to adding clients. Furthermore, when it comes to adding clients are introduced every 3 months on average. They're introduced on a monthly basis in general, and they're introduced in groups. Now, the group size may vary across domains, but there's low variability across changes, apart from about 5% of those changes that are growth bursts that can be two or three times the average. So the takeaway message here is that if you're an administrator of these systems and you want to provision for resources, you should keep in mind the clients will be added in bursts, and you should provision your resources, for example, bandwidth, accordingly. The thing is, though, that as soon as a client is added, that's not where everything ends. So for the client to send its data, it needs to be subscribed to a policy that tells it how to do so. And it turns out that this step doesn't happen at the same time as the addition of the client. As a matter of fact, 16% of the clients spend at least some time unprotected. Half of them, so 8%, spend more than half their time in the system just sitting there and not sending data. On top of that, when you look at the backup system as a whole, there's a policy that tells basically the system to back up its metadata, the master server. That policy was only used by 32% of domains in our data set. Now, these are alarming results. And so we wanted to see if there's a way to automatically configure policies for these systems. And to do so, we needed to see basically how diverse are these systems in terms of the policies of the applications that they protect. It turns out that they're not very diverse. Domains typically protect fewer than three different application types. I show here a CDF that shows how the number of, what is the average number of policy types for different domains. You'll notice that there's about 10% of domains, so basically the tail of the distribution, that protect more than six applications. That's interesting in its own right, but I want you to focus on the other end. If you look at the number of systems that only protect one application type, that's 36% of domains. So there's not really many choices when you're picking a policy. The other thing is that when it comes to the number of policies, it stays basically fixed after the first 3 weeks, which is the configuration period of the system. So the takeaway here is that domains are pretty homogeneous when it comes to client policies, and so that's good news if we want to automate policy configuration. The second category of results I'll be talking about is that of job scheduling. When I say a job, I mean a full backup, an incremental backup, or a recovery operation. We study other types of jobs in the system, but I'll just keep it simple for now. So in terms of scheduling, we looked at how frequently your job's scheduled and when. And I'll start with the former. So when it comes to frequency, one of the things we found is the rather obvious, that different job types are scheduled with different frequency characteristics. What I mean by this is that, for example, for recovery operations, we found that they are rare events and they're happening frequently. Specifically, only 3.1% of domains in our data set have ever recovered any data. And if you look at those 1,300 domains more closely, we can break them down into two groups that have distinct characteristics. About three quarters of them, more than 900, recover every 2 months on average, and they don't have many recovery events in their history. And then the rest of them are more interesting. So there's about 337 domains. Those recover every 2 weeks on average, and on average they have about 17 recovery events in their history. It turns out that the reason behind this is that administrators test their backups to see whether they can actually recover from them. But the alarming thing here is that this happens in only 0.8% of the domains in our entire data set. So it's definitely not a popular practice to test if your backups are, you can recover from your backups. The other thing is, if you look at the literature about full backups, they assume that full backups are weekly events. They happen towards the end of the week, then they're complemented by daily incremental backups. We did not see that in our data set. As a matter of fact, what we saw is that full backups are very rarely weekly events. So only 17% of domains perform full backups every 6 to 8 days. 44% perform them every 3 to 6 days, and an additional 28% perform them every 1 to 3 days. Now, on top of that, if we look at all of those systems that perform backups every 1 to 6 days, so the frequent full backups, only 33% of those also perform incremental backups. The rest of them don't. So the takeaway here is that when it comes to the designers of these systems, of backup systems, who take into account that recoverability of images is not tested by users, and also that frequent full backups are preferred compared to incremental ones. The other thing we looked at was timing of jobs, so specifically when exactly during the week are jobs scheduled. The plot I show here shows you basically the probability that a job is going to get scheduled at a given hour of the week. So the y-axis is scheduling probability, and the x-axis is the hour of the week starting from Monday at midnight until the next Monday at midnight. And so the first thing that stands out is that there's clearly a daily pattern. I went ahead and marked the beginning of and end of every day to make it more visible. The second observation is that if you look within a day, it seems like the last quarter of the day is when most of the activity happens. Specifically, there's a spike at 6 p.m. and another spike at midnight when jobs are scheduled. By schedule, I mean they start. And a final observation is if you look at the weekend, Saturdays and Sundays, although the literature assumes that this is usually when backups happen because no one's around, turns out that this is exactly the opposite in reality. It turns out that backup systems are taking a break. The reason behind these trends here is that administrators tend to prefer default scheduling windows. The default scheduling window in NetBackup starts at 6 p.m., and the second one for any jobs that don't fit in that, you guessed it right, it's at midnight. So this is the second spike. But one thing that NetBackup doesn't know about is the weekend. It turns out that administrators turn off backups during the weekends because, you know, if something goes wrong, you want to be there. The takeaway here is that if you're going to consistently use the same scheduling window, you should not be surprised if you job burst like this. And finally, the last category of results I'll be talking about is that of, you know, how backup data grows in a system. Specifically, we looked at job sizes and also retention rates. How long are data kept in the system as soon as the backup finishes. So the first thing, job sizes. I'm showing you here distributions of the average job size for different job types. So the three distributions I show are incremental backups, full backups, and recovery operations. And the x-axis shows you the average gigabytes transferred per job for a given system. So the first thing that stands out is that if you look at the green and the blue line, these are the incremental and full backup distributions. They almost completely overlap. And we were curious to find out why this was the case, since you expect that incremental backups would be smaller. It turns out that, well, one is the obvious culprit. Deduplication is why full backups end up being really small. There has been a lot of work on deduplication. We have a lot of results in the paper, but I'll omit them. So I'm just going to give you one number. On average, full backups are decreased by an order of magnitude due to deduplication. But this explains sort of like half of the picture. Why are full backups small enough that they resemble incremental backups in size? We also saw the opposite, that incremental backups can be pretty large. And we looked at support tickets to find the answer to that. It turns out that this could be either due to misconfigurations, so an administrator configures an incremental backup, and if something goes wrong, then the system falls back to a full backup to attempt to perform that. But if that succeeds, it's labeled as an incremental backup. There is another reason. The other reason is that if you have any maintenance task running in the system, like for example a virus scanner, then it might change the modification of files. And when this happens, when an incremental backup runs, it assumes that the files that it saw are modified and backs all of them up. So the takeaway, and before I get to that, so recovery operations. Another thing we found about recovery operations, we assumed that all of them would be pretty large operations where an entire volume would be recovered. Turns out that about a third of them are pretty small. They're made up of very few files and they're less than a gigabyte in size. Now, users can use an interface to pick which files to recover from an archive, and this is why this happens. But basically what I want to say here as a takeaway is that when designing systems like this, we should take that into account. This actually happens fairly frequently, 30% of the time or more. And the other thing is that deduplication, combined with what I mentioned before about frequent full backups happening more often than weekly full backups, may end up obsoleting incremental backups. Finally, retention periods for different jobs. So whenever a job is scheduled, you can pick how long the data is going to be retained in the system before it is retired. So the distributions I show here are for incremental and full backups. The x-axis shows you the retention period that was picked for that. I should point out here that for net backup, you get a drop-down menu that has preset retention periods that range from a week to a year. It turns out that 94% of administrators pick job retention from those, and they don't specify their own. And those are basically all the periods that fall within the range that I've highlighted there in the x-axis. Now, specifically, you can look at the CDF, and there's a jump every time that an X tick is there. Another thing is, when it comes to incremental backups, the default is 2 weeks, and people tend to not deviate from that. But for full backups, things are different. So the retention period can range. There are full backups that are retained a week or a month or more than a few months. It turns out there's a very strong correlation between how frequently full backups are performed in a system and how long they're being retained. More specifically, the less frequent that you perform full backups, the more time that people retain them. And this is mainly due to for storage capacity reasons. If you perform full backups very frequently, you want to retain them for less time so you have enough storage to keep them in. And that is sort of the takeaway here, that this is how people pick retention periods, and we should take that into account when designing these systems. All right, and I'll conclude with avenues for future research that are supported by our findings. So in summary, I showed results before that talk about how clients were introduced in bursts, yet they may be left unprotected because they're not subscribed to policies. On the other hand, domains are pretty homogeneous when it comes to the policies that are protecting the client, so it's not hard to pick from them. So a possible direction would be enabling these systems to automatically configure their policies for their clients. Another thing is, I mentioned before how default scheduling windows are picked, and that leads to job bursts. but the administrator is not told about that. Yet it would be pretty easy to, you know, inform the user about this or even self-heal from this. Another direction is that of improving rehydration time for deduplicated backup images. I mentioned that deduplicated full backups are frequent and sometimes are preferred to incremental ones. It seems like the last step to basically replacing incremental backups is being able to recover from deduplicated backup images pretty fast. And this is actually a pretty active area of research. We cite a number of papers in our paper that work exactly on this. Another direction is that of revisiting backup retention. I mentioned that initially that about a third of our data set, the backup systems were made up of dedicated backup appliances. So the thing that we thought when we saw this is that why not just use all of the backup storage and ask people for retention periods? Why not instead ask administrators to tell you what to delete when you've run out of space? And since retention periods are picked with storage capacity in mind, it seems that this might be the right direction to go. And the final direction that I'm going to mention here is that of re-examining techniques for instant recovery. We found that recovery events, about a third of them, are made up of a few files. And so maybe this means that we need to bring these files closer to the clients to make them recover more instantly. And again, there was a FAST paper a couple years ago that worked exactly on this. Now, with that, I will conclude my talk. Thank you very much for listening.
So of the 1 in 6 backups that failed, I think you mentioned, can you talk a little bit about that? I mean, were these backups that were verified before we announced that backups were made, or can you say anything about what
unfortunately,
the failure
modes were? So this was actually a result from a survey that we found. There's not really that many papers out there that look into backup systems or how they're used. One of Fred Douglas' paper at EMC looks at that, but other than that, there's not much work. So for that survey, the only question they had is basically how often they asked IT professionals, and they told them that 1 in 6 fails, or at least.
Was this 1 in 6 failure rate perceived as an issue or a?
Yes.
Okay.
It was.
So I had thought that I understood this from reading the paper previously, but when I looked at it as flipped through it as you were talking, I couldn't identify something. So NetBackup is both a software package and kind of an appliance of its own, right? So are you reporting the software that talks to other systems such as data domain and so on, or are you reporting only the things that go to a NetBackup appliance? And if it's the former, then does that mean that some of your full backups are going to tape as well as disk, or are you only looking at disk-based systems?
So it is the former. So that's why I mentioned initially that we have about a third of our data set is appliances. Those are actually semantic appliances. So it might actually be a higher percentage that we don't know about. Now, what was the second part of your question?
Well, I guess I was asking if the things that you were reporting on were only things that were going to those appliances or to other things like tape. So when you talk about things that
could
if people are doing full backups that are every few days,
yeah,
are they more likely to be doing that if they're going out tape than if they're going out to a disk-based appliance?
So unfortunately, we don't have this information. Like, what happens after the data leaves the system? In the telemetry that we have collected, we don't have the information of where it goes. What is the characteristics of the device where it's being stored? We're looking at extending sort of the infrastructure to collect more telemetry, but yeah.
Actually, I have a question.
Yeah.
So have you looked at the security aspect? Like, companies encrypt their data during backup?
We don't have this information. I don't know if NetBackup has a feature like that to encrypt your backups on top of that, does it? So it probably does. We don't have this information in the telemetry, though, so I can't answer that.
So like, actually, my real concern is, would that affect deduplication?
I see. OK. Once we have collected data on this, it will be interesting to look into a correlation between the two. Yes.
Thanks. So let's
follow up on the type of data you're backing up to. And the answer to this may be inherent in the name on the top of that slide. But some, if you were backing up to a storage appliance, and rather than a backup appliance, many storage appliances now are adding deduplication as part of the feature set of the mm-hmm. storage appliance.
Yep.
I'm assuming that the deduplication you're talking about is part of the backup software.
It is.
If you have a choice of incorporating the deduplication in the backup software versus backing up as a file stream to some storage appliance that has deduplication as an inherent feature of the appliance, where is that trade-off, and what would your research suggest?
So before I get to that, I want to mention that Symantec, I think, ships something like that, an appliance that does that. Mm-hmm. Not for net backup does it as well on the software side. And specifically, the deduplication rates I mentioned here are specific to client-side deduplication, which is why I mentioned average number of gigabytes transferred to the backup system. So what was your question on that?
Well, that was actually a part of it. Is it
the trade-off in terms of, you know, whether people are using the storage device deduplication versus the software one?
Right. What are the advantages of having the deduplication in the appliance that is essentially the backup media versus
yep.
having the deduplication in the software that's generating the backup?
If I had data that told me what the rates were on devices, on the hardware side, not the hardware side, the device side versus, you know, the software side, I would be able to answer that question with some data. But, you know, you could get my personal opinion on that, but I don't think that's okay. very useful. Now, what I want to say is that out of all the jobs that we looked at, I don't remember what the exact percentage was, but more than 95% were enabling deduplication within the software product. Although we know that there are customers that are using devices that can do deduplication, or in some cases they have software packages that deduplicate after the fact, after you've finished your backup. But that was not something that happened frequently.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
So let's thank the speaker.
Thank you.